Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Up All Night, a horror anthology podcast. My name is Cortland, and with me today is the guy that always rides on trains. It's Brandon. How you doing, Brandon?
Hey, trains are the transportation of the future, Cortland.
I know. We should watch Train Magic again, you know?
I would love that.
Oh, we should. We have a very special guest on today, Brandon. Ooh. We have Kat from the Splat Attack podcast. How are you doing, Kat?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on the podcast. This is fun.
My pleasure. Yeah, so we have worked a little bit together. We did a couple of live streams for the Real Life Perspective, and I haven't had Sean on yet for, you know, from Real Life Perspectives. It's coming soon. But I really enjoyed your commentary on a lot of the Are You Afraid of the Dark episodes. And I was so excited to invite you onto the show. So thank you so much for waking up early on a Saturday morning to come and talk about Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for, again, thank you for inviting me. I like to do these sort of just audio commentaries in general, but
we're gonna have a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, how much should I censor myself? What is this rated? What platform?
Oh,
is
yeah,
this
you can, no. Feel free. We are rated mature. So yeah, okay. If you wanna, I mean, even when this episode, there's lots of F-bombs and stuff. So feel free. You can say fuck if you want to. I'm not gonna edit it out or bleep it or anything. So, Kat, I want to know, though, have you, well, first of all, let me ask, anything great going on in your life recently? Anything fun?
I've been heads down with a lot of the Splat Attack podcast stuff. So we just had an interview with a cast member from All That. So that will be premiering shortly.
Cool. It's been a while since we've had, like, a worker of the sets and stuff on our podcast. I think the last
we're
one
still
we
just
had was
waiting Alan. For R.L. Stein to get back to us, huh?
Right. Yeah. And
any day now.
And Bostic. I did message Bostic.
Jovial Bob Stein.
Yeah.
That's his nickname. I'm not kidding.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's always fun to have those guests on. It's really difficult, though. I'm the kind of person, too. I do like the shots in the dark, and I'm like, hey, do you want to be on a podcast? And then they never reply. But if you guys ever want to talk to Pete from The Tale of the Midnight Madness, he is on Instagram. He does a lot of TikTok reels for, like, A Gay and a Life. Like, he goes over, like, highlighting LGBTQIA plus members and stuff. He's so nice. Like, doing the interview with him, I did that back in, like, maybe 2020 or 2021, and I bet you he would love to be on Splat Attack.
Yeah,
so definitely reach out to him. He's a sweetheart.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's one of our favorite, I mean, it's objectively one of the best episodes of Are You Afraid of the Dark, but it's definitely one of the Splat Attack favorites. All the way around. We had that in our three-way versus episode battle on Patreon this past year. I don't know, time all bleeds together, but
I hear you. Yeah. That's awesome. I love Splat Attack. I always love it being on the show and chit-chatting my good friends, and you know, you got Manny and Alex, and I'd love to have them on the show at some point too. I think we're working on some scheduling things with them, so you are the pioneer of Splat Attack to be on Up All Night.
I'm the trial, and they will surpass me. I don't know what I'm doing, but that's okay. Let's find out together.
You
got to
do well, or else I'm going to message Alex and be like, I'm sorry, I got diarrhea. You can't be on.
I'm sorry, Kat made a Spice Girls joke, and now you're going to have to fire her.
That's awesome. I always love, like, when you guys announced that you're going to be at SplatCon over in California, I was so excited for you guys, because that's so amazing. Like, you guys are doing really wonderful stuff. Your show is amazing. I'm just, like, in awe of your abilities to do YouTube, because, like, we haven't ventured over to YouTube yet. And maybe someday. Maybe someday Brandon's internet will get good enough where we can go on YouTube.
I mean, the struggle is real. Internet issues affect everybody. It's not just Brandon.
Yeah, we need to make a PSA for you, Brandon. It'll be like In the Arms of an Angel. It'll just be you with your internet issues. That'll be great. So I want to ask your cat, are you a fan of Tales from the Crypt? Like, have you watched the show before I sent you the YouTube link?
I'm going to be honest, I hadn't watched it before you sent me the YouTube link.
That's okay.
So, no, it's always cool to explore something new. So I, at the time, obviously I was too young to appreciate or even watch it, really. Probably would have had nightmares for days. At that point, Are You Afraid of the Dark was a struggle for me to watch without sort of cowering behind that couch. So
okay.
I just, yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah, Tales from the Crypt just kind of, it bypassed me. I didn't have an awareness of it. But getting into it now, it's I've seen a couple episodes, and I'm going to think, venture in to a few more. It's intriguing.
It's, you know, horror anthology is a lot of fun. A lot of creativity involved.
It's puntastic. I appreciate the Crypt Keeper. Yeah.
Yes.
It's all the dad jokes and the, yeah.
We're in season 5, so he just gets more and more punny as the series like rolls on. So like the first season, he's kind of like creepy a little bit. Season 5, though, he's been a quarterback. He does it all. Like, it's crazy. I will say, though, honestly, like, watching Tales from the Crypt, I've never watched it before. Brandon's never really watched it before either. Honestly, like, I think Are You Afraid of the Dark might be a little bit spookier at some points. These episodes tend to be a little bit on the sillier side sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The ones I've watched, they had, there was gore involved. So, obviously, in children's TV, Are You Afraid of the Dark, you can't have blood spatter and all that stuff, but
there is boobs a lot too, just the
blood and boobs,
gratuitous nudity sometimes, no biggie. Well, I mean, I just want to say thanks so much for watching this episode in particular. I think we should probably start talking about it. You guys, are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, we just got to watch the Tales from the Crypt season 5 episode 7, House of Horrors. Kat, I'm gonna ask you first, like, what did you kind of think of House of Horrors?
I mean, gosh, what did I think? I saw the plot twist coming from a mile away. Spoiler free, I guess, at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not a big fan of the frat and sorority tropes in general.
Yeah.
The hazing is hard to watch, but the comeuppance eventually is. I don't want to say I liked it because. But yeah, it's people get what they deserve, maybe? I don't know. It seems tough too. It's hard for me to
I understand.
What to say, not to make the internet mad.
It's okay. A lot of the time with Tales from the Crypt episodes, we get like a kind of a piece of shit main character that ends up getting their comeuppance in the end.
Yeah.
So this episode's kind of no different.
Yeah, that's I do enjoy the trope where it's kind of like the good triumphs, but they're not really good, but at least the assholes learn a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm used to talking about Nickelodeon shows and being a little more PC, and I'm just like, how to talk about death and slaughter and,
No, it's okay. It's okay. Brandon, I'll ask you first. What did you think of this episode?
Okay. Honestly, this episode was kind of a disappointment for me.
Okay.
When you read the description of this episode last time, I was honestly pretty excited for it. It sounded great. It did not really live up to the premise for me. Like, I was expecting, like, actual trials that these characters would have to go through, and it would be like, I don't know, like a Saw movie or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just kind of like 5 different layers of pranks.
Yeah,
it's like
a prank, bro.
The Russian stacking dolls with pranks.
Mm-hmm.
It was an okay episode. I didn't hate it, but it wasn't one of the best ones.
Right. I wouldn't say I hated this episode. My problem with it, and this might be just because I, you know, extensively took notes on it, is this episode is one of those ones that is more tell than show. There's a lot of times. So the premise of the episode, they go into a like haunted house and they have to like go up to the attic and flash their flashlight out. Like, very basic. I thought it was going to be more Saw-esque as well, where we would go inside the house and they would, you know, stumble upon like, oh, this is just a pit of spikes kind of thing, and I got to avoid it.
Yeah.
There's none of that.
Spikes.
It's not like the haunted house games from Goosebumps at all. It's more like the kids go into the haunted house and then we cut outside to watch and see the pranksters talking. And
yeah,
it's not
a guy with a soundboard. That's like half the episode.
Yeah,
the soundboard's actually the main character of this episode.
It's the best character for sure.
Yeah,
it's not good.
The title House of Horror, if you don't even read a synopsis, it's like, okay, haunted house, what is this going to be about?
Mm-hmm.
So a little vague there, but then knowing, okay, if it's about pledges in a fraternity, then okay, maybe the house itself is haunted or some horrible thing happens within the house. And it just, there are so many things that I thought it might be about, and it wasn't about any of them.
Yeah.
So in that way, I guess it was kind of disappointing. I wanted to see where it was going. But I think in the in terms of, you know, the jerk characters getting their comeuppance, they could have done more with it in, like you were saying, sort of like a Saw manner where something specific that they had done in the past was brought to light and then they were tortured with it in some way. But yeah, that didn't really happen. It was just kind of one by one, the different characters disappear into the house and you know, a lot of it is left up to your imagination.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my problem with it too. I want show.
Which, like, can be good. Like sometimes. For horror especially, like the suspense and the buildup is, you know, better than whatever, but not in this case, perhaps.
Right.
Sometimes what you imagine can be more horrific than what they could put on screen, and maybe that was the hope with this. I don't know.
It's hard to say, though, because a lot of Tales from the Crypt episodes are really good about showing rather than telling, and this one just kind of falls flat.
Yeah, this one's just coughing sound effects.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot to compare it to, so...
That's okay. Why don't we go ahead and get into it? We're going to talk about it scene by scene. We'll dive into it. Just one more complaint from me, though. There's a lot of characters in this episode, and they all have dumb names. So if I mess up a little bit in the name category here, I apologize. Like, one of the characters is literally just called Frat Boy, and I don't know which one it is. They all kind of look the same to me. Like,
yeah, it's a little I won't confusing. Even notice if you get yeah,
the
it
the visual
wrong.
Quality wasn't immaculate, so it was difficult for me to tell who was speaking mm-hmm. when, especially with the dark scenes. So I yeah. will correct you because I probably won't know the difference either.
That's okay. We'll just roll with it. If I get it wrong, somebody can correct me on Twitter. It's fine. I don't mind. Our episode begins with three bangs of a gavel, and we snap back to see the Crypt Keeper in a judge wig with a skeletal officer sitting next to his desk, a little bailiff. So this time, he is a judge. We've had a lot of different things that Crypt Keeper's done in the past. He hasn't been a judge yet, though, so bingo, right?
Judge, jury, executioner?
All that, yeah. last week, he was a stand-up comedian, and he threw a grenade into the audience, so that was pretty exciting.
Oh, so that started with a bang.
Yeah, well, no, I finished with a bang, but really, he does whatever. I mean, this has absolute. I guess you could kind of vaguely connect being a judge with the episode if you tried really hard. Usually these have nothing to do with the episode, though, so it's nothing like the Midnight Society. Crypty calls out that Fright Court is now in session and asks the defendant to please approach the desk. And I guess we're the defendant, so the camera, like, shifts up to a standing position.
I guess, yeah.
And it scooches just a bit closer to the Crypt Keeper. He tells us that we stand accused of watching too much Tales from the Crypt. We are guilty. Well, most of us are guilty.
I feel attacked.
That's a crime?
He's like, hey, don't watch this show that I spend a lot of time putting together.
I dress up and cosplay as a judge for you, and nope, can't watch it.
He asks the camera if it understands the charges, and the camera shakes its head no, because I also don't understand the charges. Or at least like we do in first person. Anyway, I don't know. Crypt Keeper just doesn't understand the charges either, which is cute. But he says, but I'll tell you this. If convicted, you'll receive a stiff sentence. You may even do a little hard time. How do you plead? And he waits a nanosecond, then says, all right, let the trial begin. Our first piece of evidence is about a tale of a couple of college boys that are about to undergo a little trial of terror of their own. And a rite of habeas corpus. Corpses? I don't know what that is. He calls this House of Horrors, you guys. Now, we get the picture for this one, and it's a little bit different than usual. Well, not the picture for it, but, like, the presentation for it, because we see the picture for a moment, and then we cut back to the Crypt Keeper, who gives a little, you know, tale intro, and then we cut back to the picture. And I don't think we've done that before, which was kind of different. But
no.
As for the picture itself, it's kind of basic. In the foreground, we have a woman with long hair that's just kind of smiling. Behind her, there's a figure dressed in all black with a chainsaw in its hands. It's raised up a bit like it's going to attack her. It must not be, though, because that woman looks really happy. So if there was a chainsaw near me, you guys, I wouldn't be smiling like that. But
yeah, whatever. If that chainsaw's on, then she would hear it. And if it's not on, then I guess it won't hurt that bad.
No, it'd be just like a blunt object kind of thing. Anyway, we fade into the episode and we're taking a look at a wall of fame. There's a couple of pictures there of some dudes, I guess, as well as an assortment of spanking paddles from the years 89 to 92. There's also these annoying symbols on them like Delta Omega, college fraternity stuff, you know?
Yep.
There's also a couple of Barbie dolls on stands. Their decor is stupid. The camera zooms in a little to the surrounding junk, you know, a baseball, and then over to a wall of shame where there's just one person's picture there. And then there's also more Barbie dolls. From a beaded curtain walks a guy with headphones on playing a Game Boy, and it uses those same generic video game sounds that Are You Afraid of the Dark uses in The Tale of the Pinball Wizard. I love it.
Same audio library. Royalty-free audio.
I love that. It's so good. It's also in The Tale of the Dark Music when the little sister is playing on whatever the hell she's playing on. It's my favorite part of the episode, you guys. We're already there. The guy walks down a hallway and bumps into another kid with some cereal or something. Then we pan over to a couch where yet another kid is looking at a dirty magazine or something. I can't really see, though. I don't know what the picture is.
I think there were boobs involved, but it was so pixelated with the awesome video quality that, yeah.
It was probably, like, it would track.
It was implied boobs.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. That gets interrupted by yet another kid in his underwear holding a bucket and a toothbrush. Who says, excuse me, Honorable President Krendel, sir. This unworthy pledge wishes to clean that portion of the floor, which is under your glorious shoes. Krendel's all, okay, just, you know, hurry up, and he shifts to the couch. This pledge, his name is Arling, and he's played by Will Wheaton. He gets to cleaning. Gets to cleaning for a moment when yet another kid walks up. There's so many characters here. Into the room with a spanking paddle saying, hey, Arling, you turd ball. Oh, I haven't heard, like, that kind of stuff since Are You Afraid of the Dark, right? Remember in Tale of the Crimson Clown when he was like turd face, I think, right?
Yeah, that's what I was just trying to think of what he said.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's my favorite part of Crimson Clown. Anyway, he calls him Turdball. Didn't I tell you to clean that section of the floor over there? And Arling snaps,
yes, sir, Grand and Glorious Pledge Master Wilton, sir.
And Wilton walks over saying, well, isn't that dog shit I see? And we look over to see that there's a couple of footprints of dog shit on the floor. Snapping back to Arling, he agrees, saying, yes, that does appear to be a smattering of canine fecal matter, sir.
It does appear to be canine fecal material, sir. I wrote that down. I don't know why that tickled my funny bone so much.
It's so good, you know? It all goes downhill from here, is what I'm trying to say. Wilton takes a seat on a chair and puts his feet up, saying, well, how do you think it got there? And we can see that on this kid's shoes is the dog shit. And Arling sees that, but chooses to blame himself for it. Probably a good move on Arling's part. What's wrong, Brandon? Are you bored?
Just, I don't understand this fraternity. Just the whole deal. I don't get it.
I've never been.
Why does anybody want this?
It's like, what's the worst type of hazing we can show on TV? And let's just put all of those things in this one episode. Let's have them crawl around on the floor in their tidy whities and clean the floor with toothbrushes and eat dog shit. And yeah, it gets to... It gets to a point where it's just like, okay, so it's a little much. Is this the scary thing? Is this what we're supposed to be afraid of?
I have never been in a fraternity. I've never been hazed before. So I don't know. I can't.
Even if you get in, though, like, you get through the hazing and you get in, like, what's the benefit? You just hang out with some dudes? Like, that's...
You hang out with the jerks after? That's the goal? I don't know.
Yeah, you get to hang out with the worst kind of people?
I don't know, because, like... I'm going to spoil something here, you guys. This fraternity kind of sucks anyway, so I don't know what the big hubba is, you know? Wilton looks over at the two other pledges, because we also have those characters. So there's about a million characters in this room, and they're also cleaning, and their names are Water and Henderson. Wilton tells them, this shit doesn't concern them, so get back to work before I paddle your asses. Then he turns his attention back to Arling, asking,
"Were you waiting for pledge? Clean it up before I make you use your tongue."
Arling thanks him and gets right back to cleaning. But then Wilton's all, hey, you forgot to kiss the soles of my shoes. So Arling stares at him for a moment and everyone just looks on. And Wilton then tells Arling to be quick about it before they put him in the dreaded wall of shame. Oh, no. And he never becomes a member and they haze him for the rest of his time at school. Sounds awful. That's what happened to D.D. DeWitt, you guys.
That sounds like a real name.
Right.
What does DD stand for?
They never say. I don't know. He throws a dart over at the single wall of shame member's picture. And then he quickly explains that this kid chickened out on a test of courage and he quit. But we never let him live it out. You know, we drove him crazy, made his life a living hell. All that rage, you know, all that cool stuff. The kid ended up degraded, debilitated, and defunct. Oh, no. He had a nervous breakdown and it was great. Makes me real proud to be gamut dealt. Then Wilton's smile fades and he gets pissed, saying, all right, my shoes, buddy. Then we get this uncomfortable shot of Arling smooching Wilton's shoes that have this shit on them. And everybody in the room starts gagging and stuff because it's super gross. And Arling gets back to cleaning. But Wilton stomps his shoes down and causes another mess right near where he's cleaning. Then he walks over and he stops and he says, remember, kiddies, Tonight's your test of courage. It'll make or break you. And he walks out of the room and over to the fridge. Arling scooches over to the two other kids in their underwear, and they all agree that Wilton's the worst, and they'd really love to break his neck.
That's fair, I guess.
Sure. I mean, he does suck. I get it. Or maybe they could crack him over the head with a baseball bat. Maybe that'd be all right, you know? One of the kids is all, fuck the baseball bat. I'd use a shovel or even an axe or a chainsaw. You know, anything, really.
Mm, foreshadowing.
I know, right? That's what I thought. I was like, I'm going to take a mental note of that one. Yeah. I remember the chainsaw in the picture. This is going to be a chainsaw. Arling tells the boys that he just wants this crap done with, and the only thing that's keeping them going is, but he's interrupted by the most obnoxious doorbell. And Wilton yells at the pledges to go get the door. So Arling crawls his way over and opens the door up. On the other side is a woman. And we get a little sexy music sting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little synth riff.
I know. I love the 90s music. It doesn't have any comparison to Are You Afraid of the Dark, so I will say. She looks down at Arling saying, gosh, you didn't have to get all dressed up for little me. And Arling here is just staring at this woman. So Wilton's all, Arling, what's a pledge supposed to do in the presence of a lady? And Arling calls out, welcome to Gamma Delta Omega. Pledge Arling at your service, miss. And he grabs her hand and smooches it. The woman, Mona, because now we have another character to talk about, tells him to just call her Mona. Then smiles, saying, my, you're quite a gentleman. Man, I like that. Have we met all the characters yet? All
right, Wesley Crusher.
How many characters are we at here? We got, that's too many. Too many. The kid reading the magazine or whatever swoops in, introducing himself as Tex Crandall, president of the house, and asks what name they can do for her. I know, right? D.D. DeWitt wasn't, but this one, totally a name, right? I told you, look, I prefaced here. All these names are ridiculous.
Tex Crandall's definitely like a cowboy comic book adventure character.
I mean, it reminds me of Tex Avery, who did all the animations of like old Looney Tunes shows back in like the 50s. I like Tex Avery. I don't like Tex Crandall, though. He's not the worst, but... Mona says, you see our sorority, Delta Omega Alpha, boring, just opened a chapter on campus and wants to affiliate with a fraternity for various social events. Although she assumes an organization like this already has a sister house. Is that a thing?
I was not a member of a sorority. I do not understand how any of the Frazzo sororities operate, but I'm pretty sure there are like brother-sister houses that are related somehow.
I assume it's so they can party, right? Like, that's the only benefit I can see.
I don't know. I don't understand the whole system, honestly.
That's okay. Yeah, I mean, they could, like, say anything, and I would be like, oh, that's how it works, I guess.
It's like a status thing, but I don't know. Hmm. To what? Yeah, I have no idea. Let's just accept it and move on.
Okay, that's fair. Crandall tells her that they do not have a sister fraternity house. No, a sister sorority house. That they've been on probate, we've been reviewing our situation and might consider an affiliation if they meet their standards. Mona's all, oh.
Y'all want to be certain we're not some doghouse, right?
Well, how about three or four of y'all come on over for some dinner tonight and meet the sisters up close and personal? Wilton slides in and puts his hand on Crandall's shoulder saying, Mona, could you give us a second? Then he turns around and talks to Crandall saying that this is... just too good to be true. It's got to be one of those sorority initiation stunts. They get a bunch of guys over, make a fool of them. It's happened before. And then he says, let me flesh this out. And I don't know why he says that, but whatever. While they're talking, we see Mona eyeing up Arling on the ground. But enough of that, though, because Wilton turns his attention to Mona saying, Mona, we'd love to. Unfortunately, tonight's our final pledge at an off-campus locale. Oh, I'm Les Wilton, by the way, the pledge master. It's my job to make men out of these boys. Mona's all, gosh, I always thought making men out of boys was a woman's job. Wilton tells her, oh, then perhaps you'd like to volunteer your services. This episode. I'm sure the pleasures wouldn't mind. And he giggles. Then he says, oh my goodness, I apologize. That was just so rude of me and just so insensitive. However, since we can't send any brothers to your house tonight, perhaps you'd like to come to our little ritual. Mona tells him, nah. We wouldn't want to be interrupting any of that social sacred ritual bullshit. So he nods his head saying, oh, well, you wouldn't be interfering if we invited you. Nevertheless, thanks for your invitation and we wish you a good luck on finding a brother house. Guys, it's just so much talking in this episode.
It really is.
Yeah, nothing like exposition through dialogue.
It's the worst. We see him scooch her closer to the door, but she stops and looks down at Arling on the ground saying, well... if you're certain we wouldn't be interfering, we'll be there. And Arling smiles at her. Then she opens the door and leaves. Over with Arling, he whispers that that's what's been keeping him going. Mona, in particular. I don't know. Okay, let's get into the interesting parts here, right, you guys? Because we're in a car now, and there's driving stuff. Yeah. Action, if you will.
Driving on our way to a night shoot? All right.
Yes. They're talking about how they're almost there, but it's expedition dump time. So the two frat boys that are driving tell the Pledges, who are blindfolded, that they know Wilton's pushing them kind of hard, and he's not exactly the type of man they approve of. So Arling asks why they let him be the Pledge Master in the first place, and the driver tells them that it's all politics. Because about 6 years ago, because we need to know this, Gamma Delta came close to getting in a scandal, but Wilton found some dirt on the Dean, and bingo bango, no more scandal. Wilton decided he liked the job of Pledge Master, so it's been that way ever since. And one of the Pledges, I don't know if it's Water or Henderson, because I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
Between them. Yeah. He asks, but wait, like 6 years ago, why hasn't Wilton graduated? And one of the frat boy tells him that guys like Wilton just, they never graduate. They just live in college like Van forever. Wilder. I don't
know. They never grow up.
Yeah. Or Dazed and Confused, right? It's like that.
Oh. Yeah, Matthew McConaughey?
Yeah, because he makes a comment about never graduating, too. Enough of that little chit-chat, though, because Wilton is standing outside in front of the car with a big torch, and he yells, "End of the line, kiddies. Pledges walk from here on out." So we snap to the Pledges walking here on out. They're going their ways over to a haunted house, right? But we need more backstory here, guys. So Wilton tells Waters to give us some more backstory on what they're going to be doing and where they're going. So Walters tells us that the coffer house was owned by an old hermit with a black cloak and a hood who had a mean cough, and you could hear it from a mile away. They called him the coffer.
Wow.
I know.
Exactly, right?
Clever group of folks we got here.
And his house was the coffer house. Then Wilton yells at Walters to swallow his gum and continue. So, I don't know. I kept a mental note of that as well, I guess. Look, I got a lot of mental notes going on, and guess what? Nothing happens. So,
some of them pay off. Some of them don't, but some of them do.
Most of them don't. God, this story. I'm sorry. I wish we would have invited you a better episode. I'm sorry.
No.
So he talks about how one time this one frat house burned down, the mayor, who was a member, swindled the coffer out of his own house and gave it to the fraternity. So the coffer then cursed the house and killed himself. And Arling wraps this disposition up saying, a year later, 9 members of Alpha Sigma who lived in the house, including the mayor's son, were murdered with an axe by somebody wearing a black hood with a hacking cough. And the house was condemned. And that was back in 1933. And we're in like 1993 now, so yeah. We pass by a no trespassing sign as one of the boys says, ever since then, the coffer's ghost is still in there, making sure nobody's in that house. They say you can still hear him coughing. After that, they've arrived at the house, so Wilton tells the boys to remove their blindfolds. They do, and they look over at the most generic haunted house ever. Ever.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me a little bit of the Beetlejuice house.
Why do ghosts cough? I know I'm hung up on that as a point of contention, but...
Coughs are the scariest thing, you know, when you think about it.
If I died and had to just live in one place, like, for eternity... And I was just sick the whole time? Oh my god, that would suck so bad.
This house is all like giant, and it's like really chiseled up. There's like boards boarding the window and all that. It's pretty sloppy. We see another couple of cars nearby, and there's just like people all over the outside of this house just walking around. We cut to the front of the house where Wilton lights up a cigarette and then throws it into a garbage can or something, and it blazes up in an inferno. He tells the Pledges, here's the deal. You each have a flashlight, and you can see the row of windows, you know, over here. And we take a quick look up at the house. We see him, like, flashlight the windows, you know, whatever. There's one on the second floor, and then there's one on the attic. So they go in, they run up to the second floor window, they flash the light 3 times, they climb a ladder, and they go to the attic. And they flash the light 3 times in that window. Then they wait, and they call him back down. If they make it, they're in. So that is their trial. They have to go into the house and go to the window and flash a flashlight. Pretty tough.
Why do they have to flash the flashlight in the first window?
You know, it's light enough for them to be able to see figures in the windows.
Yeah. I don't know. Why not just make the goal to go to the attic and flash your light?
I don't know. It's like a checkpoint or something? I don't know.
It's in the script, Brandon. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
It's to build suspense. Oh, they got through the first checkpoint. Now will they get to the second?
Right, even though, like, the house is big, but I think it would take maybe 2 minutes to get to the attic if you were to just go there. Yeah.
Like, even if you've never been in it before, it's just like, oh, this is the stairs leading up, and then down that hallway there's another flight of stairs? Okay.
Yeah, because, like, spoilers, when you go into the house, because we do see the inside of this house, the first thing you go into are the stairs. There's really guesswork here. So, like, he's like, you know, sounds easy, right? But, oh, the joint's haunted, and Mr. Axe Murderer's ghost doesn't like visitors. And he points his light at a kid that has a bowl cut and a hippie jacket, saying, Henderson, you're first. So Henderson walks up, he turns around to the other pledges, and he says, see ya, boys, in the attic. And Mona's there too, I guess. I don't know. And she walks up telling the boys good luck, and they just love fraternity men. And then Henderson howls like a wolf, like an idiot for a second. I don't know why that's in this episode. And Wilton pushes him away. It's very embarrassing.
The sorority girls decided to come anyway?
Yeah, they said they would make it over there for whatever reason. I don't know. They're bored, I guess. Who knows? They're in the wrong episode if they're bored, though. Okay, we're like almost halfway done. My notes are very long for this one. Like I said, very chatty episode. Wilton then turns his attention to Mona, saying, so, Mona, where's the rest of your sisters? That can't be all of them, because there's like two other girls with her. And Mona says that she doesn't know if her other sisters are going to make it. So Wilton thinks that's just too bad, because him and Sparks over here, because we got another character, rigged up some great gags, and they're going to miss a good show. And we cut over to Sparks in the car, and he waves. Over with Henderson, he makes his way to the front door and opens that shit up, wondering what's all the hubba in here, you know? I expected us not to see the inside of this house, like, at all, so I'm glad that we finally make our way
in
here.
Oh, we had to. Yeah. We had to.
I wouldn't have put it past this episode to not show us the inside at all and just be, like, watching what happens from the outside. That would have been so
stupid. There's no budget for decorating the inside of the house. They just need to do all exterior shots and reaction shots.
That'd be so stupid.
The cost of cobwebs alone.
You know what? You know, with Henderson, we make his way into the house and to the stairs, and there's just a bunch of cobwebs and dust everywhere. And honestly, it looks pretty good. They did a good job of, like, decorating this, you know, derelict house.
Yeah. It looks like in Casper when they go in Whipstaff Manor.
Oh my God. You never stop bringing
up
Casper.
So that's why the ghost is coughing.
Right. Yeah. There's dust everywhere.
All that dust.
It's got, you know, the asbestos. It was a problem, you know?
Yeah.
At the top of the stairs, there's a dummy on a noose that flies in front of him, and it scares the dickens out of our poor Henderson. But he composes himself, saying,
you damn near kill me.
And then he throws that dummy down the stairs. Back outside, Sparks boops a couple of buttons on his, like, remote control thing, and then we hear the sound of a chainsaw revving up, and Wilton stomps over, saying, you asshole, it's supposed to be a ghost of an axe murderer, not a chainsaw massacre. Sparks is all, pshaw, artistic license. And then he boops another button.
Yeah, you need
and those, sound
those
effects
axe sound effects.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Okay, so if you're Henderson or Waters and you're waiting for your turn to go.
Yeah, yep.
Up, you see all this stuff going on.
Yeah, like 10 feet away from you, you see Sparks and he's got his comically large remote control. And he's like, all right, activating the sound effects.
Yeah.
There with his Casio keyboard.
I make a note of that because it is really stupid. They let one of the three pledges go in first, and the other two are just outside seeing that they have everything rigged up for silliness. And it's like, well, that just breaks the illusion. Like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, they're not even blindfolded anymore. Like, you wouldn't think to isolate them, keep them in the car, keep them blindfolded, something, so they don't see all the pulleys and levers. I don't know.
I think it's just bad writing, honestly. I don't know who wrote this episode.
That would
but
be
they,
like
they
if in Home Alone, Kevin just let one of the burglars watch the other guy go through all the traps. And I was like, all right, you come on now. I reset the spider.
Reset the spider.
It's stupid. Yeah, it very much took me out of the episode. From outside, we look into the window of the second story, and we see Henderson flashing his light a few times. So he made it to the second floor, as we watched. And the other pledges get excited, saying, one down, one to go. Then Henderson screams, and Arling is all, Jesus, that sounded like Henderson. I mean, who else could it fucking be, you idiot? Yeah. Water tells him, nah, they just got the place wired for sound, as we saw. We'll see him in the attic window any minute now. And the boys look up at the attic, but they don't see anything. Over with Wilton, he's getting a beer from a cooler, and we hear the sound effects of that chainsaw again. So he looks up at the house saying, hey, I thought I told you to bag that chainsaw. And over with Sparks, he's booping some more buttons, and we hear that coughing track play again. And get used to that because it plays a lot. One of the frat boys asks, hey, Wilton, what's taking him so long to get to the attic? and Wilton declares he thinks Henderson just ain't Gamma Delta material. Now, Waters, let's see if you're worthy. Move your buns. And he, like, pushes Waters into the house. Mona tells Waters to show him what he's got, so Waters heads on inside. With Arling, he looks inside the house and sees a figure holding an axe pass by the window, and he calls out,
Waters! There's somebody on the second floor with a cloak and an axe.
And Waters looks up and sees nothing, and is all, you're shitting me, Arling. And Arling tells him, no way, Jose, I totally just saw a dude.
He's a righteous dude.
I love that line. I've never really watched, what was that movie? Who is it? Somebody's Day Off, right?
Ferris Bueller's Day Off, yeah.
Somebody's Day
Off. Yeah, I've never really seen that movie. Yeah, he's a righteous dude. Wilton starts making chicken noises, so Waters ignores the threat of being murdered by an axe and walks into the house. With Waters, he blows a bubble with that gum that he didn't swallow earlier and looks around with his flashlight. And I was just like, why did they specifically say, hey, swallow that gum when he didn't? I don't get it.
I don't know. They made a point to say that they recorded the coughing sounds at, like, a lung cancer ward in a hospital?
Oh, yes.
Is that what they said? Like, what?
They really felt the need to, like, explain everything.
Yeah. They did, but it just doesn't go anywhere. Oh, this episode. He calls out, Henderson, you there, buddy? And we hear a door close, so he's all, Henderson, is that you? You know, it's like, oh, where are you? But as he slowly makes his way up the stairs, and we hear that coughing track again, which startles him for just a second, even though he's heard it like 6 times already. He's got his hand on the banister walking up them stairs, because safety is his number one concern. But his hand slides right into a pool of blood. He slowly lifts that hand up, looks at it, and screams, because that shit's scary. Then he smells it and takes a lick, because that's what you do. And he says, oh, it's just strawberry jelly. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, positive. Yum.
He calls them fuckers, and then he clomps his way back up the stairs. Outside, Arling takes a moment to smile at Mona before we hear Waters scream from inside the house. And then a severed hand gets tossed out of a window and slams on the hood of the car. One of the frat boys grabs it with a smile, then drops it saying, shit, this is real. From inside the house, Sparks screams out the window, sick, Wilton, very, very sick. I don't know. The frat boys outside deduce that Wilson must have gotten that severed human arm from med school, because that's logical. From outside, we hear the chainsaw rev up again and then cut over to Sparks beep-booping on his controller.
Who's throwing the arm?
That's a good question.
That is a good question.
And what, I don't know. The physics are off. The science is broken. It's
yeah.
I guess they were assuming it flies off of the body when it's being chopped by a chainsaw, but I don't know.
They shot it from a cannon?
Just have to, like, defenestrate it, just yeet it out the window.
Yeah. I think you're trying to say that this episode is stupid, Cat.
No. I have an open mind about this episode. I just wanted to see where it went after this. I'm like, okay, where's it going? What's the payoff? Come on. Oh,
I mean, there's a very slight payoff, I suppose, later. He starts banging on this controller. We're Sparks here. And Wilton walks up yelling that he told Sparks to lose that chainsaw shit. So Sparks is all, it ain't me. My system must be screwed up because this is supposed to be a scream. And then we hear Waters scream from inside the house again. Lots of screaming. And Wilton gets all excited and runs away. With Sparks, he's all, wait, this thing can't play two sounds at once? This is 1993. Oh, man.
Such technology is impossible.
Meanwhile, they wired the house for sound with a Casio keyboard. And is there power? Who's paying the electric bill? I have questions.
Oh, my God. I wondered the same thing.
Oh, man.
We snap over to a very quick dramatic shot of the haunted house and then move over to the frat boys, who walk over to Wilton saying, hey, what's going on in here? Why ain't there any signs of them pledges? And Wilton tells them it's because they're fucking with them. That's why. Laying low, trying to make me look bad. Ain't that right, Arling? And he walks over to Arling and shines a flashlight in his face. And Arling tells him that he doesn't know, but he doesn't like it. Wilton's all, whatever. Like it or not, you're going in there with them. I'm going to make it my business to ride your ass from here on out. Okay, I said that wrong.
Giggity?
Okay. I forgot an or. Okay. He just wants to ride his ass. No big deal. Wilton's all, whatever. Like it or not, you're going in there, or I'm going to make it my business to ride your ass from here on out. And Arling complains that he saw somebody in the window with an axe and how he ain't going in there. And he goes to walk away, but Wilton grabs him saying,
you're so chicken, I bet you could make it to the second floor. In fact,
I get $100 saying you won't.
Arling's done with this shit. He's going to walk away, but he passes by Mona, who says $100 would buy one terrific dinner date. So Arling stops and thinks on that dinner date for a moment. And then he walks back over to Wilton saying, you're on. And Wilton grabs him by the shirt saying, great, now get in there. Then he walks over to Mona saying, so Mona, does that dinner date apply to me too? And she tells him, sure, if you win, but you won't win. I'm sure that young man will rise to the occasion.
Giggity.
I know. I don't know. Mona's crazy. With that, Arling slowly heads on inside the house. In there, he looks around with his flashlight and calls out for Waters and Henderson. Outside, Wilton runs up to Spark saying, hey, great arm gag, by the way. Spark tells him, oh, I didn't do that. I thought you did that. And the two giggle at each other, and Wilton tells him that they gotta fry that little twerp or he's gonna cost him a C-note. Spark says, all, you got it, boss. And then he boops a button that he's already been booping. He pushes the fry Arling button, I guess. But no, it's actually just the cough track for the 100th time. Inside, Arling looks around while that coughing sound effect plays. And he makes his way to the stairs, calling for Waters and Henderson again. And he very, very slowly looks around with his flashlight. And we see from behind him a figure walking around on the second floor. But Arling doesn't see that because, you know, that's how it goes.
Because this old house doesn't creak at all for some reason.
Oh my God, right? He calls out, this isn't funny, and continues making his way up to the second story. There's this like heartbeat sound that plays, like I'm supposed to feel anxiety towards this character, but I feel nothing at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wesley Crusher's, he's not afraid of no ghost.
Right. He calls out again for Waters when a figure in all black grabs his back, and Arling flips around and screams, and it's this like, this guy in the black cloak, and he's got this kind of zombified face a bit, and we see he's got an axe in his hands.
It's like a putty face.
Right, yeah, it's very Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, you know? Arling backs up to the railing for the stairs, but he accidentally busts through it, and then he falls down the stairs, and that's like the most action we get in this episode.
Busting makes me feel good.
We take a look from outside. We take a look from outside. We're almost done, I promise. We're almost done, you guys. We take a look from outside the house as two frat boys, they hear Arling screaming and they're like, oh, Jesus, shit, goddamn. Is that what he says? That's what Arling says, isn't it?
Yeah.
I like that part. Oh, Jesus.
Goddamn, motherfucker, son of a bitch.
I love, like, everything you could say, he says. But these kids, they bust into action and they run to the house. And all the boys open up the doors and they go inside and they see Arling just laying on the floor screaming about how he saw a ghost with an axe. And it's real and it tried to kill him and everything. And they got Henderson and Waters. Wilton grabs that dummy from before saying, take a look, you asshole. It's just a dummy. Now that everybody's in here, Wilton screams out, did I call this or what? We're talking wall of shame here, people. Mr. Gutless Wonder of 1993. And Arling tells him, no, there's totally a ghost in here. And he's upstairs, and I even saw it. And Wilton calls bullshit, because even the legend was made up years ago in the school's newspaper, so pledges could research it for initiations. All that shit that they talked about, all that exposition, never even happened. Oh, there's no coffer, and there never even was.
You gotta give them points for effort there. I mean, that's a long game. You're like, I'm gonna plant fake stories in the newspaper periodically so people can research and stumble upon them to validate our story for hazing purpose.
It was a nice little touch.
You gotta admire that.
They went through so much trouble for all of this.
Mm-hmm.
The story and wiring this house up and
it's worth it, Brandon.
The props and the costumes. Is it worth it, though? Because
no, it's not. I'm so curious.
Like, going from, hey, you're on your hands and knees in your underwear scrubbing dog shit, like, that's like bad hazing. And from there, the final test is, we're going to tell you a spooky ghost story, and then you have to go in a house and flash a flashlight. For a fraternity, that doesn't seem like real bad hazing.
One thing I appreciate about this episode is the little details of them being like, yeah, we planted all of this evidence, you know, it kind of creates a lore for the story. But also, everybody does not like Wilton, because Wilton's an asshole. And even in the car, they were like, yeah, we don't actually like him. We just kind of let him do what he does. I appreciate that side.
We let him pretend he's the boss.
Yeah. They're just kind of putting up with his shit because they, I don't know. I mean, they don't have to. Maybe fear. That's kind of the only thing I appreciate about this episode is that it talks about this. I don't know. I don't know if there's anything I appreciate about this episode, actually. Don't think about it. So after all that, he says Arling's a wuss and owes him $100. And it bought him a date with Mona. She likes men, you guys. And puts his arm around Mona. One of the frat boys tells Wilton to call down the rest of the pledges so that they can hit the trail. So Wilton takes a step up to the stairs, calling out, Waters, Henderson, this is your grand and glorious pledge master here. I'm in the house and I want you to come on down now. Arling calls out from behind him, hey, ain't you supposed to go to the attic and get them down yourself? Which is news to me. I don't think they ever talked about that part of it.
I don't remember.
Did I miss it? Yeah, I don't remember him saying that he has to go up to the attic. It was, they go to the attic, they flash the lights, and then they go back down. That was all I heard. Whatever. Wilton slowly turns around saying, oh, so it's an ambush, huh? I go up there and you guys jump me? You had it planned all along, huh? Well, I ain't falling for your bullshit. One of the frat boys tells him,
what's the matter, Wilton? You afraid of getting bushwhacked by a couple of dweeb pledges?
Like, dude, that's like literally what he just said. He's scared of getting jumped by pledges. The gang inside all kind of chuckle, and Mona's all, gosh, I thought Hughes was a man. And Wilton tells them, of course I'm a man. Watch this. And then he starts stomping his way up the stairs. We hear that cough track play for about a millisecond, and Wilton turns around screaming, hey, Sparks, cut that shit out. Spark tells him, oh, it wasn't me, boss. They already yanked the wires. There's not even wiretapped anymore. I don't know when he did that, but they did it, I guess. And we hear a hacking cough again. So Wilton looks around a little bit, all scared, and he asks Sparks to come with him since, you know, he doesn't remember how they rigged everything up there, I guess. I don't know. Sparks tells him, nah. So Wilton's all, okay, well, I'll go first, and you guys come up behind me. You know, us brothers got to stick together, right? The guys all start just balking like chickens, so Wilton tells them, hey, there's a difference between being chicken and being stupid. Because now there is. There wasn't before, though.
There's a fine line between bravery and stupidity, and they jump rope over that line several times in this episode.
Yeah. One of the frat boys is all, oh yeah? How would you know? Because he's stupid. So Wilton shines his light on him saying, I'll remember this. I'm going to pay back each and every one of you. Then the coughing starts to begin, so Wilton starts going up them stairs. At the second level, we see that figure with an axe run up to Wilton and then just jumps at him and he's screaming and Wilton falls to the ground. Down the stairs, everybody is like super spooked about this. And then the figure starts laughing a bunch and pulls off his mask saying, remember me? It's Dee Dee DeWitt.
Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, shit.
I thought he kind of looked like a grown-up Gary.
He kind of did. Oh, no. I can't unsee it now.
I know. I'm sorry. I don't know why they brought Dee Dee DeWitt of all people into this episode, just adding another character. But we got Dee Dee DeWitt now.
See, now I have this whole thing where, well, Tucker is running the new Midnight Society. This is what Gary's doing.
Yeah, he's off to college, going on walls of shame and all that. So Dee Dee here, we call him Dee Dee. He says, guess I proved you're not Gamma Delta material either. And he laughs some more. Then balks like a chicken and cackles like a maniac. Dee Dee here, he takes some steps down the stairs saying, and about those other pledges, I put a note on the attic door telling them not to signal or do anything until they heard the password, happy birthday. And I signed the note, Les Wilton. Was that his name, Les? Whatever. It was Lex, wasn't it?
No, it's Les.
Okay.
That was Tex.
Tex Wilton? No, Tex 8. No, Tex was the pledge man. You know what? It doesn't matter.
Tex Crandall.
Right. He laughs as Wilton yells, nobody does that to me. With Mona, she's seen enough, and she snaps her fingers, saying, let's go, girls. And Wilton yells for her to wait, that she owes him a date. And one of the frat boys, because honestly I can't keep them all straight, tells Wilton to call for all of the rest of the pledges to come on down so they can leave. And Wilton stands up, and he calls out for Waters and Henderson, which didn't we just do this? We just did this. He yells that it's happy birthday, and they should come on down now. They don't for a second, so he yells, what, did you hear me? I said happy birthday. Now move.
What? The secret password, happy birthday, gets me. Like, what?
It's so stupid. It's like this whole episode, you know, just random and stupid. From down the stairs, we hear some laughter, and Wilton flashes his light on DeWitt, or Dee Dee, you know, saying, I swear to God, if you're fucking with me. But DeWitt laughs, saying, maybe they will jump you. Oh, God, I said that like an idiot. But maybe they will jump you. DeWitt laughs here saying that maybe they're going to jump him. The crowd heckle Wilton to go up there and get him, or they're going to expel his ass. So Wilton's all, ugh, whatever, expel me? I don't think so. He makes his way upstairs.
I've been in college for 6 years. Nobody expels me.
I'm unexpellable.
I've got tenure.
Something.
On the first floor, Sparks goes up to DeWitt saying, "So it was you that rigged the arm?" And DeWitt's all, "Huh? What arm are you talking about?" And one of the frat boys pulls out that severed human arm, and DeWitt's all, "No, that ain't mine.
This arm."
Yeah, this arm.
What arm? This arm.
Just has it. You know, it was on the hood of a car, but whatever. Then Arlene calls out, "OMG, that's a pledge ring." Because that severed arm, it has a ring on its fingers, which the boys somehow didn't notice at all until now. And they deduced that that ring is Henderson's ring.
Ruh-roh, Raggy.
They're all like Harriet the Spies up in here.
Sorry.
No, you're good.
I'm just going to make Scooby-Doo references from here on out. It's fine.
That's fair. This episode is Scooby-Doo bullshit, so it's okay. Over with Wilton, he's climbing up the ladder yelling at Walters and Henderson. And he opens up the door to the attic, which has that note on there saying, you know, passwords, happy birthday. He crumbles that note up, calling Walters, Henderson, and he looks around the room. And this room is just like a bunch of furniture and drapes and shit. But there's also a garbage can with human bones and skulls and shit in it.
Why?
He touches one and he gets super creeped out because it's gross. And we hear somebody stomping in the attic, and we look over to see a couple of gals walking over. Here we go. One of the girls calls out,
"Welcome to Delta Omega Alpha Pledge Night. We just love fraternity boys."
You see, DOA is an all ghoul sorority.
I'm a nerd who noticed that.
Okay.
Delta Omega Alpha. I'm like, huh, DOA, that doesn't bode well. Like, within the first time she said it.
I didn't notice it at all when they first said it.
I'm a word nerd, so I look for acronyms and stuff spelled forwards and backwards everywhere to try to make connections and anticipate.
I love that.
What the ending is going to be.
So you kind of called this then.
So I was like, okay, so she's a baddie. Let's see how this plays into this.
Wow. Okay. I didn't see this coming. And when it did happen, I just kind of sighed. The lights flash on and she cackles. And we see the ladies' faces and they have some prosthetics now to turn them into ghouls.
Kind of.
They look like the vampires from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Like the makeup.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yes.
That's very the first much. Thing I thought of.
That is like the perfect like comparison to it. They definitely look like that. They have kind of like bumpy faces.
Yeah. Like the big like bumpy forehead, mm-hmm. you know, prolific brow or whatever. And I didn't see if they had fangs, but I did notice that. Yeah. It's very much looks like I might want to cross-reference this and see if the makeup artist was similar.
It might be
from somebody from Buffy because it looked like the vampire faces.
Yeah, it did. I've never really watched Buffy, but I know exactly what you're talking about, and I agree. For some reason, you guys, there's this little elevator that apparently works in this house that lifts up another gaggle of girls, and Mona is there as well. The main ghoul girl tells Wilton that he's about to become Delta Omega material now because it's dinner time, and one of the ladies raises up a chainsaw as Mona exits the elevator, saying, "See, Les. You get your dinner date after all, and I'm just so famished for a man." And the main ghoul girl calls out for the pledges to remember to eat every bite, or they'll end up on the wall of shame. And she laughs a bunch, because that's hilarious. The girl with the chainsaw revs that shit up as Wilton falls to the ground near the wall of shame, because he's, like, right next to it. And then, instead of running or anything, he just screams a bunch as a chainsaw tears into him. From downstairs, the boys hear that chainsaw business, and they get spooked. Because, remember, there's just this whole foyer of kids in this house.
Yeah.
So, like, they're not going to get away with anything.
Yeah, frat boys we hadn't seen prior. They just come in and looks like there's, you know, 15 extras for some reason.
That's ridiculous. Understand. Then a severed head tumbles down the stairs, and the boys look at it. Then one of them screams. And we get a shot of the outside of the house as the main ghoul girl cackles, and then we fade out. And it was ghouls again. So this is the second time that Tales from the Crypt has used ghouls as, like, the, you know, villains of the episode. And the first time I was like, holy shit, it's ghouls. I've never seen ghouls in, you know, a horror anthology show. It was done really well. This time it's kind of like an afterthought thing for this episode. And it didn't even really have to be there.
Yeah, sort of like, what are they? Are they vampires? Or are they, call them ghouls. That's fine.
Yep.
Girls, ghouls.
Yeah.
We can make a pun, so print it.
Yeah.
If they can make a pun, they'll do it.
With the Creep Keeper, he's still in his judge outfit, and he says, "Poor Les. I know they say that college costs an arm and a leg, but this is ridiculous." And he giggles. Still, he thinks we'd be happy to know that he was part of one last food fright. We see the bailiff's skeletal hand drop into frame, and Crypti looks at it, and he says, ah, I see we've reached a verdict. And he lifts up the little paper that the skeleton hand was handing him, and he turns his attention to off-camera, asking, members of the Gori, do you fiend the defendant guilty or not guilty? And we quick pan over to the jury, which are just a bunch of hanging skeletons by nooses, and then they snap back into the Crypt Keeper, who flinches, saying, what do you know, a hung jury? And he laughs us out of the episode, and thank God that's the end of House of Horrors. I feel like I've survived. A lot, you guys. We did. With all of that in mind, you guys, I said this already, but why? Why?
Why so much, anything?
So much talking, not enough showing about a billion characters. I find in these shows, the more characters you have, the less like interesting the episode is.
I feel like they could have used some of the money that they paid the extra actors like toward some of the set design and set decorating and maybe special effects of some kind or even practical effects to make the inside of the house creepier and allow us to explore the house a little more.
And maybe have
some more scares and gags or something instead of just the exterior
and
shots
needed a pit of spikes.
Where there's more people just kind of congregating around this house for no reason.
This episode is kind of like a combination of two much better episodes. So if you're interested in Kat and watching like a good haunted house episode from Tales from the Crypt, season two, I believe, Television Terror, that episode's really well done. It's kind of the same premise where it's people going into a haunted house, but it's more like a documentary, like live stream of a guy going into a haunted house. And they show a lot more of the house, and it's just a better episode. So if you kind of like this one a little bit, but you're like, I want more house, you know, I would recommend watching Television Terror. It was a really good episode.
Cool. Yeah. Noted.
Did you guys learn anything from this episode? Was there any, like, moral of the stories here?
Stay away from fraternities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hazing is bad. Which it is. And we can joke around all you want, but hazing is horrendous. But I feel like if they wanted to make that point, maybe they could have just the jerks have their comeuppance and not the innocent pledges.
Yeah, good
point.
Like, that
to me was like, okay, so the innocent guys die. Okay.
Yeah, because it's kind of implied that the garbage can of bones and stuff are Sparks and...
Yeah, that's
what
I got out of it.
No, Waters and Henderson. Yeah.
That's what I got out of it, because there's two... I saw two skulls. I'm not sure if there were more, but I saw like two fresh, bloody, or strawberry jam covered skulls. And the other thing, I don't know, it's somehow twisted into like Smash the Patriarchy somehow.
A little bit.
I don't know.
I learned that boys are stupid.
Yeah.
I also learned that a Game Boy makes bidi-doop sounds no matter what show you're in.
No matter what game you're playing.
Mm-hmm. At least it didn't have a reset button right on the front, though, right? Alternate titles, you guys. House of Horrors. This house was not really filled with horrors. I think we can come up with a better title than that. Even something simple like The Pledge would have been fine.
Yeah.
House of Not Horror?
Yeah, that fits it a little better.
The Cough.
The Cough. Yeah. How to use a soundboard.
I'm trying to come up with a pun. The worst one I come up with is a sorority with like a horror in the middle.
Oh, I thought you said that's a whore, like whore, you know, like Scott.
No.
My wife and I watch Outlander, so anytime anybody says whore, I have to say it whore, you know, like you're Scottish.
Oh, okay.
So that's how I say it. It makes my life laugh.
You could just call it DOA.
DOA would be good.
Maybe that ruins everything on the outset, but yeah.
Doesn't matter. There's no saving this episode anyway.
Yeah, this episode's a lost cause, you guys.
DOA, yeah.
This episode was DOA.
Ooh. It works on a meta level.
Well, you guys, here is the part where we would talk about the cast, but for some reason, my internet isn't working at the moment, and my son stole my phone to go watch it while he was being quiet in the other room. Brandon, would you be able to go on IMDb and talk about these people for me?
All right, sure. So, first of all, in this episode, we've got Les Wilton, who's played by Kevin Dillon, and I'm pretty sure he gets, like, a special guest credit at the beginning of this episode, which I was surprised by, because, like, at this point in his career, I didn't didn't know he was really in much.
Is he famous? Like, is he somebody?
I've never seen the show, but I know that he's in Entourage. He's in 96 okay. episode of Entourage. So he's in that. That's probably okay. what he's most famous yeah. for. But he started his career in 1985, the movie called Heaven Help Us.
Oh, who hasn't seen that?
Yeah, he was in the 1988 remake of The Blob.
The Blob.
Oh, what character did he play in it?
He played Brian.
I don't remember Brian. I don't even know why I asked. I just watched that movie not too long ago, though, for the first time.
Probably just some guy eaten by a blob.
You know, have you seen The Blob, the remake?
Not the remake, no.
Brandon, did you see the remake?
No, I haven't. I heard it's good.
It's got some really good special effects in it. Practical effects, I should say. A lot of, like, melting people, and there's this dude that gets sucked down, like, the drain of a sink and stuff. It's got some pretty cool stuff in it. Hmm. It's worth a watch.
All right. Up to this point, I don't think Kevin Dillon had been in much of note.
We get that a lot. Either we get, like, Whoopi Goldberg, or we get somebody that, kind of like an Are You Afraid of the Dark, where they're, like, they're little babies, you know, and they're just
Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. What else? What's he been in more recently?
He was in Entourage.
Nothing I've heard of.
No.
Oh, Poseidon. He was in NYPD Blue. I'm looking at his bio and trying to find the credits that are in the bio, like on IMDb. And it says that he was in the film A Day to Die opposite Bruce Willis.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah. He's in an episode of Creepshow, the 2021.
Oh. Cool. Okay. Series. Maybe we'll see him again then. When we eventually cover.
Yeah, still doing horror anthologies.
Perfect. What's our next character?
All right. Next we have Mona, who's played by Meredith Salinger.
Mm-hmm.
And, she was in Lake Placid, apparently. Mm. Is she the chick from Lake Placid? Maybe. I loved that movie.
You love all the weird movies, Brandon.
Yeah, I know. Let's see. She started her career in, she's been in quite a lot of things.
Wow.
She was an uncredited orphan in 1982's Annie.
Oh, who wasn't though, right? I was in there too, you guys.
Oh, she was on an episode of Buffy?
Oh, cool. We just talked about Buffy. I love that. You know, maybe that's the
connection. Maybe she was the makeup. She did the makeup for this and that. Maybe.
We create our own headcanons. Most of the time when I talk about these people, I'm like, oh, they were in this, and they were obviously the main character. So our own headcanons for all these famous people.
She was in two episodes of Super Robot Monkey Team Hyperforce Go.
Oh, that's a memory I forgot about.
Yeah, I forgot that I knew that existed.
Race to Witch Mountain?
Oh, I remember that.
Hollywood Heights said she was in 71 episodes of Hollywood Heights, which I did not know that existed. It's a TV show.
I feel like I have a vague memory of something of it existing, but not enough to be able to talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, that seems like that's the most significant thing in her career. She's in one episode or two episodes of shows here and there. Her most recent role is in a movie called The Prank, 2022.
Oh, she's still working it then. All right. That's cool. Next.
All right. Next,
we got about a million of these.
Oh, we got so many characters, and my internet is really starting to shit the bed.
mine already did.
Next, we have the first of the pledges, Arling, played by Will Wheaton.
All right.
Have we talked about him on the show, Corlin? Has he been in an episode of anything?
We talked about him on a Plot Points episode because he was in Toy Soldiers, but I don't think he was in an episode of anything we've covered on the main feed yet.
Okay. Well, Will Wheaton and Keith Coogan, who played Waters in this, were both on Toy Soldiers.
Oh, I didn't even.
So that's one of their credits. Okay. Yeah, Will Wheaton's been in a lot of stuff. You've probably seen him. He was Wesley Crusher in Star Trek The Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Stand By Me, The Secret of Nim, apparently. That's news to me.
Okay.
Played the voice of Martin.
Oh, he voiced one of the little mice.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that forever.
A lot of voice acting. Plays himself in The Big Bang Theory.
Yep, he does.
The Guild. You guys ever see The Guild with Felicia Day?
Is that like a podcast YouTube series?
I've seen that a long time ago.
It was
a
YouTube.
Ago.
Yeah, it was like one of the first, in my mind, one of the first big YouTube web series.
Yeah, I remember people loving it.
Yeah, it's good. Recommend. But he did not play himself, but he played the leader of another guild.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, he's been in everything.
Does he do directing nowadays? Didn't he direct or write or something?
I don't see any directing credits on here.
Oh, for some reason I have him connected with Marvel movies, and I don't know why. Oh, that's Joss Whedon, isn't it?
Yeah, Joss Whedon did Marvel for a little bit.
Okay. Forgive me, I'm stupid.
Will Wheaton also produced a series, tabletop games.
Yeah. Anyway, next character.
Next we have Waters, played by Keith Coogan. He plays Brad in Adventures in Babysitting, and I pretty much try to mention Adventures in Babysitting in every episode of this podcast. So that was an easy one this time. He's in some other stuff that doesn't matter. He has 84 credits on IMDb. None of it is Adventures in Babysitting 2. So he was Kenny in Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, a movie I know. I've seen, but I can't remember anything about.
All right, next character. We got to get through this.
All right, rushing through now. We've got Jason London, who plays Henderson. Is Jason London the Mallrats guy? I'm loading the page now. It's loading. It's loading.
Wow, he's got a lot of credits. Hang on. Scrolling.
Yeah, a surprising amount.
He was in Dazed and Confused. Jeez. Scrolling.
This would be so much easier if I just had internet. I'm sorry, you guys.
Coming up. He's in an episode here and there of like Criminal Minds, CSI, Ghost Whisperer.
He was in the movie To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar, which is like my favorite title of a movie ever.
I don't know. Last week we had Shark and Sass. Remember that? Shark and Saw, Woman's Prison Extraordinaire, whatever.
It's close.
Oh, he's in an episode of or TV movie called Shark Island from 2015. Ooh.
Awesome.
So, spooky.
I'm not. That's not a shark. And another one called Damn Sharks, DAM Sharks. So I don't know if that's
sharks
part
were
like
a hot
Sharknado
thing for a while.
Thing or, yeah.
You I know, so. It's funny because Brandon lives on Shark Island right now.
It's true.
Sharks, jellyfish, spiders, etc.
There's so many things in Australia that like spiders the size of dogs. Like no.
Yeah, no, Brandon sends me pictures of spiders every once in a while. It's the best.
No. Yeah. No, thank you.
I'm like glad I don't live there. Is that all the characters? We got like 16 more?
Oh god.
There's one more, I guess, who has like more than one line. Sparks, the guy who does all the sound effects and remote control nonsense. He's played by Michael DeLuise, the son of Dom DeLuise of the DeLuise dynasty. He played the guy in Encino Man.
Yeah, another one of your favorite movies.
You know that guy.
Like I said before, though, he's not the DeLuise that's in Wizards of Waverly Place. So what's the point?
No, but he is the DeLuise who plays TJ in Gilmore Girls. And I love him for that.
Oh, okay. All right. I've never seen Gilmore Girls. That one's got Melissa McCarthy
in it, doesn't
it? You
should watch Gilmore Girls, Coraline.
Yes.
Yes.
I should watch Gilmore Girls.
I think you would love it.
Knowing me, you know I'd love it. Yeah.
I know you would love it.
Can we talk about D.D. DeWitt for a second, too? I want to see if it's Gary. It's not Gary. I'm not Ross.
It's Holder. Not Gary. It's Ross played Holder. By Bill Bill Kahn, who doesn't have an IMDb profile picture. So,
ooh, good sign.
Yeah. He's got 12 credits. None of them matter.
Okay. Wow.
He was in Tomcats, the 2001 man. Jerry O'Connell movie as Orderly with Sticky Buns.
Oh, classic role. Dude, I wish I had some sticky buns.
Yeah, there's a... Yeah, there's a lot of roles here. It's like literally one man in bathrobe, man number two, clerk number one. Oh, poor guy. Cashier number two.
Wow. Okay, making it big. All right.
Yeah, so this Tales from the Crypt role looks like maybe his biggest role. Ooh. He's got a name and everything.
Okay. Well, that's our cast.
All right. That's all the actors.
At this point, I would talk about what the next episode is, but I can't because my internet's like fucked up. Brandon, right. What's the next episode? Tell me.
This is like the shortest description for an episode ever. So next episode is called Well-Cooked Hams.
What is that?
I know.
Well-Cooked
and
Hams?
The description is a ruthless young magician kills an elderly rival magician for his grand prop, the Box of Death.
Okay.
Did you say Well-Cooked Hams? My first thought was, okay, is this a pun with something with comedy? Is it like a stand-up comedian kills another stand-up comedian?
Nope. Nothing that makes sense.
So what's hammy about it? Where's the ham?
Well, there's a picture of the Box of Death, and it kind of looks like a ham a little bit. Maybe that's it.
You know what, Brandon? The only thing that reminds me of is the Brack show when he says three hams will surely kill him.
Beef log, what a treat.
I know. Anytime I hear the word ham, I think of that.
A hefty hunk of processed meat.
You know, Kat, I'm so sorry that you're not here for well-cooked hams, because that sounds pretty good, even though I don't like ham.
It's a meat log, no? Oh.
Oh, my God. Well, you know what, Kat? I know this episode was a bit of a hot mess, but I'm so glad that you were here to enjoy it with
us. I mean, I feel like some of the episodes that are hot messes they're really fun to make fun of, like Mystery Science Theater. Yes. Audio commentary style. So yeah, thank you for allowing me to just interject here and there with my random pleasure. Quotes and Scooby-Doo. Ruh-roh.
I love it. Why don't you tell us, you know, where we can find you, Kat? Like, what have you been working on? I mean, obviously you're part of the Splat Attack podcast, but where can people find it?
Yeah, Splat Attack podcast on, I was going to say, well, anywhere where podcasts are hosted, but I actually would recommend our YouTube channel. Because we've been doing a lot of visual stuff lately, to the point where it's almost a webcast.
Yeah, it's like iCarly.
Yeah. No, it's not. Don't say iCarly. It's not. It's nothing like iCarly. No. But we do have our graphic designer, Jordy, makes all of the 3D renderings of our Mythic studio space. Like, there's this whole backstory we have this season where we're building Splat Attack studios, and things keep going wrong because I keep writing scripts in which we somehow break parts of the studio. That's mostly me. But yeah, there's a lot of visual effects that we have in there, so I recommend YouTube for Splat Attack podcasts. But you can also be found on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And then I can be found, my personal Instagram, everything is just at Catherine Jersey on, again, Facebook, Instagram, etc. But yeah, I'm mainly doing podcast stuff now. And then my Instagram is full of podcast stuff and then photos of my cat, Phoebe, who is...
Oh, perfect.
A laugh and a half. So,
yeah. Yeah, Phoebe's
a
treasure.
She's the chaos nugget. I call her a chaos nugget. Yeah, you don't know this, but through the entire recording of this podcast episode, I've been trying to distract her with some of her string on a stick toys because she has been jumping all over my desk and trying to purr directly into the microphone. So if you hear any random like bang, clash, boom sound effects, they're not from a Casio keyboard. It's from me trying to shoo her away from the audio equipment.
I love that. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for taking some time out and talking with us about some Tales from the Crypt. It was a lot of fun. I know this episode was kind of rough. A lot of after editing, it'll be probably about 20 minutes long. So, but I just want to say thank you so much for joining us. First of the Splat Attackers to be on the show, with many more to come. And I'm really excited.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun. Once we got in the groove, it's like, what do you think of this episode? Can I bash it? Just... right now, what should I say? I try to be diplomatic and, you know, perceive without judging most of the time, but
this episode this makes really it tough fun. Though.
Mm-hmm. It was fun though. There was a lot going on. There was a lot going on.
We'll have you back on at some point and it'll definitely, I can pretty much guarantee it'll be a better episode. So.
Okay.
It's got to be.
No, I'd love to try this again. I'd love to have a redo. No.
Yeah.
No, nothing on you, just on me.
No, it'll definitely be a better episode, whether it's Tales from the Crypt or whatever else we're talking about after that and stuff. Like, we'll have you back on for sure.
Yeah, no, this was fun. Tales of the Crypt, I'm going to admit, because it's not in my wheelhouse, but Goosebumps and Are You Afraid of the Dark and all that stuff. I know you've already covered those, but those I could just talk about forever.
I love them. Well, I think that's all I got for you guys today. I've been up all night. I think I'm going to get... Well, I have a lot of crap to do, but I'm going to pretend like I'm going to go back to bed. Thanks again, Kat, for joining us. I'm out of here. Thanks, you guys. Have a great rest of the day. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Spot you later.
Saying you won't.